Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Buenos dias. Good morning and welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you very much for listening. My number is 888-914-9149. We have lines open right now, 888-914-9149. Somebody asked yesterday, were you feeling okay on Friday when you did your show? Honest truth is, I had a bad cold. And some of you heard it, but I thank you for asking. I feel worlds better, much, much better. I feel fine, as a matter of fact, as the Beatles would say. I feel fine, but Friday, I had that cold. But, you know, things come and go in this veil of tears. 888-914-9149. I have a lot I want to catch you up on with regard to things that have happened over the weekend in Ukraine and Russia, things that are just, you know, continuing to unfold in this weird, you know, everyone thought that when Russia rolled into Ukraine that it would be over in a matter of hours or days, that they would not be able to put up any kind of a defense against the Russian bear. The army and the navy and the air force in Russia is presumed to be invincible, and not so much. Over the last, what has it been now, 4 days, 5 days, 4 days, Russia's kind of stuck in, I don't know, they're not in reverse, not yet anyway, but they're certainly not making the kind of gains that I think most people assume that they would. And the Ukrainians have put up a valiant fight in defense of their homeland that I think few people thought they would be able to do, unless you're from Ukraine, perhaps you knew that they could do that. But I think most people, onlookers, watchers, they just assumed that this was probably going to be in just a slam dunk for Russia, and it hasn't been. So I'm happy to see a lot of pushback against Russia, and we'll get into some of the things that different countries are doing, including our own country. I thought this was interesting, though. Cyrus, I don't know if you saw this. Occupied Democrats, it's a far left, Looney Tunes, fringe radical left group on Twitter. And back in 2016, I saw this floating around this morning. Back in 2016, they tweeted, "No civilian needs an AR-15, regardless of whatever mental gymnastics you do. You are a very special breed of stupid." So that was 2016. What a difference 6 years will make, because just a few days ago, Occupy Democrats on Twitter, they said, "Breaking, Ukraine's interior minister announces that 10,000 automatic rifles have been handed out to the civilians of Kyiv as they prepare to fight tooth and nail to defend their homes against Putin's invasion. RT if you stand with the brave Ukrainian people." And that's all in caps.
No hypocrisy there.
Well, the hypocrisy knows no bounds, as Doc Holliday said to Val, or as Doc Holliday said to Wyatt Earp. "Seems my hypocrisy knows no bounds," as he lay dying of tuberculosis. But anyway, back to this. Yeah, so it is hypocritical because they're hip, hip, hooray, rah, rah, sis, boom, ba. Look, isn't it great the government's handing out 10,000 automatic rifles so that the civilians can defend themselves? Back in 2016, they say no civilian needs an AR-15, regardless of whatever mental gymnastics you do. You're a very special breed of stupid. And the one from February 24th, the one where they're all in favor of it, that's there. You can go see it. But if you search, you will search in vain, as I did, for the June 14th, 2016 post, "No civilian needs an AR-15. That's how far their hypocrisy goes, because they took that down. People started pointing it out. Like, oh, okay, so you don't want American citizens to have the possibility of defending themselves, but you're A-okay with Ukrainian citizens having, at government expense, 10,000 automatic rifles to defend themselves. So, yeah, not a special kind of stupid, I'd say a special kind of hypocrisy. So that happened. Also, most of Europe has closed its airspace to Russia. You may have seen this. All of Western Europe, as of last night, I didn't check it this morning, but as of last night, Spain was, I think, the only European country, possibly Portugal, but definitely Spain, unlike France, Germany, and all the rest of them, including Scandinavia, had all closed their airspace to Russian commercial traffic. And one of the spokespeople for the European Union over the weekend, she pointed out that this is a ban not just on commercial airlines, like for Aeroflot and other Russian airlines, but for any kind of airplane or aircraft of any kind that is in any way controlled by or registered with or owned by or associated with Russians at all, including the oligarchs, she says. So you and your private jets no longer will you be able to fly into or over European airspace. And other countries, it looks like, are lining up to do the same thing. I don't know that the United States has announced that yet, but other countries are following suit. I think that's a good thing. I think a little more on the oddball side is that liquor stores all across the U.S. and Canada have started throwing out their stocks of Russian vodka. Now, this to me seems like a very short-sighted, kind of a dumb thing to do, if you ask me. And there have been any number of videos out there on YouTube and social media showing bar owners and restaurant owners and other people who have stocks of Russian liquor dumping them out. Please understand, that doesn't hurt Russia. Vladimir Putin is not crying tears of sorrow when he sees the Applebee's manager pouring Russian vodka, which may not even be owned by a Russian company, by the way. Cyrus, too bad we didn't look up like Stolichnaya and some of these Russian-sounding vodkas. They might be owned by American or Western conglomerates now. They may not even be owned by a Russian distillery. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I don't know. What do I know? But I do know this, that if you're the Applebee's manager and you're for the camera, you're pouring out bottles of vodka, that doesn't hurt Russia at all because you already paid for that. That's hurting you. Slap a different label on it. You know, put a different label on that vodka. Or maybe put it in the well and just, they won't know what kind of vodka it
is. I have a feeling that these aren't being dumped. They're being stored in the back and, you know, no matter what, they can come out as winners. In a few months, they can sell it at a super increased price. Mm-hmm. Or it'll just be normal again and they'll go back out on the shelf. So either way, they win by just taking it off the shelf for now.
I can see that. I can see that.
This alcohol isn't being poured down any drains.
Oh, there's some of the videos that shows it.
Oh, all right. Yeah. I stand corrected.
Well, I mean, it's like even on the ground. Hey, look at me. We're striking a blow for freedom. We're pouring all the Russian-sounding vodka on the ground. Now, I'm not knocking the sentiment. I'm not saying that they're wrong to do that. I mean, they're trying to make a point, and I can see that. And I'm not arguing with that, not at all. But what would really, you know, put a hurt on Putin or put a hurt on Russia would be if, as the governor of Ohio, Mike DeWine, who's a Republican, he is one of the people, one of the more national voices who's calling for a boycott on being allowed to purchase and sell Russian vodka. That's where you could put a hurt on them because they produce a lot of vodka. That's a big staple for their economy. I mean, heaven knows how much vodka is consumed in Russia. So the New York Times, for example, has an article, as of yesterday, I think it is, that more and more, not just state governments, but also just voices around the country are saying, why don't we just band together and say that from now on, it'll be illegal, perhaps, for the time being anyway, to purchase and sell Russian vodka or any other Russian product as a way to put the hurt on Vladimir Putin. So Virginia, for example, they have 400 state-run alcoholic beverage control authority stores. And a politician there in Virginia in the Senate, he's calling for the removal of all Russian vodka and any other Russian products for that matter. So could happen. I don't know. In 2003, France's opposition to the United States-led military action in Iraq led some American politicians to boycott French wine. And they tried to rename French fries as Freedom Fries. even though French fries originated in Belgium.
That's good.
It's like I prank my grandchildren. I say, where do hot dogs come from? And they'll say, well, it says hot dog. Is it from a dog? And they get that look on, no, Grandpa, it's not from a dog. Well, where is it from? Well, they're not sure. The younger they are, the more they don't know.
First, we have French fries and French dressing.
French?
And French bread. And to drink. French. Ta-da! Peru.
I'm not even sure what that was.
An old John Cusack movie. I'll just leave it at that. Oh,
okay.
It's very funny.
Thank you.
Those that know, know.
Thank you for sharing. So, hey, check this out. Before you pour out the vodka, these are French vodkas, okay? So don't pour out the French vodkas. Grey Goose, Chirac, Galant, Mont Blanc. They account for 39% of the total vodka import value, the most of any country. Sweden has vodkas like Absolut, DQ. They account for about 18%. The other top importers are from Netherlands, Latvia, Britain, Poland. Russia accounts for a little more than 1% of the dollar amount of vodka imported into the U.S. in 2017. I have a feeling that's going to go down from 1%. Going to go down below 1%. But it's not as though we're swimming in Russian vodka over here. So when you see videos of people proudly pouring out the Russian vodka, just be aware that it's not hurting Russia at all. By the way, Anonymous, the group that hacks, The Guardian has an article about them. They've been waging cyber warfare against Russia. They claimed credit for hacking the Russian Ministry of Defense website and its database. By the way, Cyrus, I don't know how often you visit the Kremlin website, kremlin.ru. You probably have it bookmarked. But they were down over the weekend. And I guess Anonymous, these are a bunch of like pimply-faced kids.
Careful.
In their, I know. Oh, I'm sorry. They're handsome and very intelligent young men. Well-spoken.
Lady magnets.
Yeah, leave me out of this, guys. But they took down the Kremlin website. The Kremlin website. But these guys, these hacker guys, cyber conflicts are fought in the shadows, but in the case of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, this is from The Guardian, it is a group that calls itself Anonymous that has made the most public declaration of war. Late on Thursday, the hacker collective tweeted from an account linked to Anonymous, at your Anon1, that it had Vladimir Putin's regime in its sights. It's so breathless the way they're reporting this. In the days since, the group has claimed credit for several cyber incidents, including distributed denial of service attacks where a site is rendered unreachable by being bombarded with traffic that have brought down government websites, that of RT, the Russian. Oh, by the way, that's another collateral damage item, Cyrus. RT has been banned throughout all of Europe. I think it's already gone here in the United States. And the other Russian organ of disinformation, Sputnik. Those two Twitter feeds were actually interesting back in the day. I would kind of keep an eye on them just to see what their spin was on things. And those now have been banned throughout Europe. I don't think the U.S. is allowing them anymore. Or if they do, it's not going to be for much longer. They got taken down. The Kremlin got taken down. Ministry for Defense in Russia got taken down. So apparently these guys can actually do some stuff. I'm glad that they're doing it in the right direction. So do you feel like all of your... there's even more. There's even more, Cyrus. I don't want to leave anything out. You like the movie Red Dawn as much as anyone else, don't you?
I grew up liking that movie a lot. Yeah.
With Patrick Swayze.
Swayze.
Well, no, that's how... who's that guy? Funny guy from Saturday Night Live.
He does Farley?
No. This is one of the current guys.
Oh, I don't know.
His name will come to me. He's in the Taco Town commercial. I can see his face.
Then he's not a new guy.
Well,
that's like
you're right,
20 man. Years ago.
He's one of the newer guys. Anyway, so he does an Italian, like an Italian billionaire impersonation, and he refers to him as Patrick Swayze. But anyway, so Patrick Swayze, Red Dawn, first movie, then they had a remake of it. And there was a poll that was done, this was reported by the Daily Caller, asking Americans if given the fact that Ukrainians are currently fighting to repel a Russian invasion, this was a poll that was taken on Twitter, would you be willing to conduct guerrilla warfare like in the movie Red Dawn if the USA was invaded? So for those of you who don't know, the article says, Red Dawn revolves around a bunch of young people fighting against the communist invasion, and it's maybe the most, I'm going to change the word, awesome movie ever made.
I don't know if I'd go that far. That's debatable.
Tombstone definitely is a better movie. But, I mean, I appreciated Red Dawn for what it was. I thought it was an interesting exercise in, you know, what if. So this is not a scientific poll, but as of when this article came out over the weekend, of the 7,029 voters, 91.8% of people voted that they would take up arms to defend the USA. Occupied Democrats will have something to say about that, by the way. They won't like it if you're in the United States wanting to do that. They love it if you're in Ukraine wanting to do that. 8.2% of the people voted against resisting an invasion. I think that's sort of self-explanatory. What would you do, Cyrus, if Russian paratroopers suddenly showed up in your town, USA? You woke up and they're like Russian tanks going around. Would you and Patrick Swayze go get your cache of weapons and fight back?
I'm not killing anybody. I'm a conscientious objector.
Okay. I mean, I respect that.
Yeah. So I hate all of this, Patrick. I really, really hate it. Oh, I hate
so do I.
All of it. And it's innocent people that are the ones that always get hurt when these governments start playing Risk. Mm-hmm. And I really hate it, and I just pray for it all to stop.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Debbie
now
Downer.
Now you're getting all serious on me.
Debbie Downer over here. I mean, what I do, you're going to be Patrick Swayze, right? And then I would, who would I be? Is Sean Austin in that movie?
I think Patrick Swayze could play me in a movie.
Yeah, and I'd be
I mean, back in the day.
Back in the day, that, right.
He had the
if
Patrick
we had
Madrid
to be the characters in Red Dawn, you're Patrick Swayze.
Would you be the guy who gets shot?
I would be the guy that gets shot, yeah.
Oh, man.
I'd be one of those. It's Russians take over a school, right?
Well, they're in school. No, they're in class. They're like in math class in high school. And they look out the window and there's like paratroopers landing on the football field.
That's right.
And of course, you know, it's not 2022 because they go out to their truck and there's a gun in the gun rack in their pickup truck.
That's right. Yeah. And no one is just, you know, filming it with their phones.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, just before we have to take our break, here's another little tidbit. And I do want to get into what does the Catholic Church teach about the just war theory? You know, when is it ever okay? Is it ever justified to go to war? And if so, what are the criteria? That's something I want to cover when we return. Plus your phone calls too. But this is also part of the mix here. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, he called for foreigners to come to Ukraine to fight against the Russians, saying that we're going to arm you. And here's a quote from a message that he gave. We successfully fought off enemy attacks. We are defending our country, our land, future of our children. Kyiv and key places near the capital are under our control. The occupier wanted to capture our capital and install their puppets like Donetsk. We broke their idea. Anyone who wants to come over here and defend our country, please come and we will give you arms. Anybody defends will have been glorified. The remarks came after the most intense night of fighting so far, which saw major explosions and gun battles in cities across Ukraine. Zelensky also posted a video to Twitter that appeared to be taken shortly after the sun came up, in which he encouraged Ukrainians not to listen to fake reports that were floating around, claiming that they were surrendering to the Russians. Zelensky said, "Recently, fake info was spread about me, ordering our army to lay down arms and evacuate. It's untrue. I'm here. We're not laying down. We will protect our state. This is our land, our country, our kids, and we will defend them." He refused to be evacuated from the country as Russian military forces are hunting him. Some reports are saying that there are assassination teams roaming around trying to find him to kill him. Let's see. The Washington Post reported the U.S. government is prepared to help Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky leave Kyiv to avoid being captured or killed by advancing Russian forces, according to U.S. and Ukrainian officials. This, by the way, I'm reading from an article from the Daily Wire. We'll get that posted for you. So, yeah, they really are fighting for their lives over there. So when we return, we will delve into what does the Catholic Church teach about a just war? Is there such thing as a just war? Is it ever a good thing to wage a war? And if so, what are those circumstances? I will share all of that with you on the other side of this timeout, plus your phone calls right after this.
You can ask Patrick your questions by calling 888-914-9149.
Remember when this song was on the radio back in the 70s? Little band called War. You're not playing the refrain. Here we go. Here we go. Pump it up. All right. You know why we can't be friends, Cyrus? Not you and me.
I was going to say.
We're already friends. Because Vladimir Putin says no. Vladimir Putin. They ought to play this. They ought to send this song over to Vladimir Putin. Just see what he'd say. I know what he'd say. He'd say, Nyet. That's one or two words I know in Russian. That's one of them. But this is no laughing matter. I mean, this is a really terrible situation. And we're not in the least making light of it because people, are innocent people, of course, are being killed. And over the weekend, you may have seen that there is a very surprising a phenomenon of massive Russian casualties being reported. As of Saturday afternoon, Sunday morning, it was in the neighborhood of close to 5,000 Russian troops that were being reported as having been killed. You know, many tanks destroyed, Russian tanks, supposedly state-of-the-art tanks, apparently not that state-of-the-art. Lots of their aircraft shot down out of the sky. So to whatever extent those numbers are accurate, you'd have to think that, among other things, this is causing Vladimir Putin some real heartburn in that he probably thought everybody would be in such great fear of the Russian military machine. And I think people have been, I mean, until the last several days at least, because now there's reason to wonder to what extent are they really as formidable as everybody thought they were. And if the Ukrainian army, not to mention just the homebrew militia people, just the average Joe, and grandmothers with Kalashnikov rifles that have been passed out to them, if they are able to stop the advance of the Russian military and thwart their efforts, I understand that there's a very large convoy of additional men and materiel on its way into Ukraine, so this may change. As you know, Vladimir Putin put his forces on high alert for deterrence, which is another word for the nuclear arsenal to be activated. Very, very, very scary things that are going on right now. So it's important to take into account, you know, like, what is going on here and to what extent is somebody ever in a position to wage war? I think that this is the perfect showcasing of what the Catholic Church has talked about over the years with regard to when is it a just war? When is it justified to go to war? When? And what are the circumstances? How do you know? Was it justified to go to war in the first Gulf War in 1990 and then the second Gulf War in 2003 when George W. Bush, via the late Colin Powell, who made his presentation to the United Nations, I remember being riveted to that presentation. I listened to it on the radio. I was traveling somewhere, and I listened to Colin Powell's entire speech in which he talked about weapons of mass destruction and how Saddam Hussein was poised to use these weapons of mass destruction, not only on his own people, but on other countries as well. And there was a hue and cry, and Hillary Clinton and John Kerry and all of the other usual suspects on the left, they all lined up in agreement with Colin Powell that yes, and George W. Bush, that yes, these weapons really do exist. Yes, we have to go in and we have to take out Saddam Hussein, regime change, all of that. And then, of course, it all turned out not to be true, at least that part of it anyway. So in retrospect, one is left wondering what might have happened if we hadn't done what we did in 2003. Only God knows. There's no way for us to know. But the Pope, Pope John Paul II at that time, who was very elderly, of course, and he was already very sick with Parkinson's disease, he was speaking out against it, and he was saying war is always a defeat. Don't go to war, don't go to war. And I wish that more people had listened, myself included, because I think most people, was persuaded by the apparent evidence that was given. And I'm not saying that Colin Powell, as Secretary of State, was lying. I imagine he probably believed everything he said because it was given to him on good authority by the military-industrial complex and the CIA and whatever other sources were involved in supplying that data. I was on the other side of the equation with most other people and saying, it looks like we probably do have to go to war, only to have egg on my face later to find out that, well, we didn't have to go to war after all. So what does the Catholic Church say about this issue? First thing I quote to you is a segment from Gaudium et Spes, Joy and Hope. This is section 79. This is a document from the Second Vatican Council. And in it, the Church says that there are times when war is justified. So here's what the Second Vatican Council said. Certainly, war has not been rooted out of human affairs as long as the danger of war remains and there is no competent and sufficiently powerful authority at the international level. Governments cannot be denied the right to legitimate defense once every means of peaceful settlement has been exhausted. State authorities and others who share public responsibility have the duty to conduct such grave matters soberly and to protect the welfare of the people entrusted to their care. But it is one thing to undertake military action for the just defense of the people, and something else again to seek the subjugation of other nations. Nor by the same token does the mere fact that war has unhappily begun mean that all is fair between the warring parties. So I'm going to read to you some selections from the Catechism that outline this particular issue. So if you look at the Catechism, paragraph 2263 and forward, it talks about legitimate self-defense. So that could be understood as you personally defending yourself if you're under attack. You know, fists are flying or a knife comes out or somebody's coming through the window of your home at 3 a.m. You have a right to defend yourself. And if you're a father or a husband, you have a duty to defend your wife and your children. It doesn't mean that moms also wouldn't have a duty, but I think the common scenario is, you know, the husband of the house, he defends his family. So here's what the Catechism says, 2263. The legitimate defense of persons in societies is not an exception to the prohibition against the murder of the innocent that constitutes intentional killing. The act of self-defense can have a double effect, the preservation of one's own life and the killing of the aggressor. The one is intended, the other is not. This is the classic, you know, formula known commonly as the principle of double effect, where what you intend is itself good, and the means that you're using to achieve that good end is also either good in itself or at least is morally neutral. In other words, it's not intrinsically evil, even though there is an unintended side effect. The next paragraph, love toward oneself remains a fundamental principle of morality. Therefore, it is legitimate to insist on respect for one's own right to life. Someone who defends his life is not guilty of murder, even if he is forced to deal his aggressor a lethal blow. If a man in self-defense uses more than necessary violence, it will be unlawful. Whereas if he repels force with moderation, his defense will be lawful. Nor is it necessary for salvation that a man omit the act of moderate self-defense to avoid killing the other man, since one is bound to take more care of one's own life than of another. Legitimate defense can be not only a right, but a grave duty for one who is responsible for the lives of others. The defense of the common good requires that an unjust aggressor be rendered unable to cause harm. For this reason, those who legitimately hold authority also have the right to use arms to repel aggressors against the civil community entrusted to their responsibility. I mean, this is like the perfect scenario for Ukraine. The efforts to curb The spread of behavior harmful to people's rights and to the basic rules of civil society correspond to the requirement of safeguarding the common good. Legitimate public authority has the right and duty to inflict punishment proportionate to the gravity of the offense. Recourse to war, as it gets into now, in paragraph 2307. The Fifth Commandment forbids the intentional destruction of human life. Because of the evils and injustices that accompany all war, the Church insistently urges everyone to prayer and to action so that the divine goodness may free us from the ancient bondage of war. All citizens and all governments are obliged to work for avoidance of war. However, as long as the danger of war persists and there is no international authority with the necessary competence and power, governments cannot be denied the right of lawful self-defense once all peace efforts have failed. Now, it's here outlining the strict conditions, as it puts it in the Catechism, paragraph 2309. The strict conditions for legitimate defense by military force require rigorous consideration. The gravity of such a decision makes it subject to rigorous conditions of moral legitimacy. Therefore, at one and the same time, now these prerequisites, the Catechism is saying, they must be present all at the same time, simultaneously. It can't be like, well, one of them is present today, and then a month from now, another one is present, but this one is no longer present. They all have to present themselves simultaneously, and here they are. These are the criteria under the Catholic Church's moral teaching for a just war. Number one, the damage inflicted by the aggressor. Let's just put this in Russian-Ukrainian terms. The damage inflicted by Russia on Ukraine must be lasting, grave, and certain. It is. Lasting, grave, and certain. Well, it's definitely certain. The Russians are in Ukraine now, bombing cities, killing civilians. It's grave. And it will last. I mean, they're not doing this for kicks. They're not doing this just, you know, to give their troops some exercise. They plan on staying there if they're allowed to. Second criterion. All other means of putting an end to it must have been shown to be impractical or ineffective. And in the months and weeks and certainly days leading up to the actual invasion, there was a flurry of diplomatic activity and the threat of sanctions and various other things, some of which are now coming true. And that was, it seems to me, sort of exhausted. And Putin still went in. The third criterion, there must be serious prospects of success. Well, yes, but if you're Ukraine and you're facing what appears to be an overwhelming aggressor in the case of Russia, you may not have any serious prospects of success. You may just be fighting for your life and you're not sure how it's going to turn out. But short of a scenario like that, there must be the serious prospect of success. Otherwise, why go to war if there's absolutely no chance you can win? I think the subtext here, which is not stated, but I think it's alluded to, would be that if you realize that if you put up a fight, every single person in your country is going to get wiped out. But if you surrender, your people can live, and there's no hope of winning. I think an extreme scenario like that is what the Catechism envisions. And then lastly, the use of arms must not produce evils and disorders graver than the evil to be eliminated. The power of modern means of destruction weighs very heavily in evaluating this condition. That's code for nuclear war. I mean, it's not just nuclear war, but it's primarily nuclear war. So if Ukraine was somehow able to smuggle a suitcase nuke into Moscow, for example, it would be immoral under these criteria, as I read them, for Ukraine to take out, let's say, a couple million people, innocent people in Russia. Well, you'd have some people who weren't innocent who would go up and smoke with them. But in other words, it would be disproportionate. Now, there may be better examples of it than that, but that's what comes to mind. So it goes on in that regard in terms of, you know, what are the obligations that people have to non-combatants and wounded soldiers and prisoners and things like that. Of course, you can never kill somebody who's surrendered. You can't kill on the battlefield, if the enemy soldier has his hands up and he's surrendering to you, actually surrendering, not trying to fake it. If you were to kill him at that point, that would be murder. And then one last paragraph, which is important, paragraph 2314. Every act of war directed to the indiscriminate destruction of whole cities or vast areas with their inhabitants is a crime against God and man, which merits firm and unequivocal condemnation. That's another reference to nuclear war. They also include under that umbrella atomic, biological, chemical weapons to commit such crimes. So if you've been wondering about how does this all play out in light of the church's moral teaching, that's where you'll find it in the catechism. Okay, quick timeout. We're going to go to the phones on the other side of this timeout. The number to dial, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Hey, Cyrus, FYI.
Hey.
You're not old enough, and I know this, I'm not just putting it down or anything, but I don't think you're old enough to remember the duck and cover days back in public school where they'd say, if there's a nuclear explosion, get under your desk, duck and cover.
Yeah, I that's going to save drills. You.
Well, a lot of it had to do with, you know, like, don't look at the window. Don't look at the flash. Don't look at the windows because, you know, broken glass. So I think a lot of it was get under the desks so that you would be shielded to some extent from flying glass. Obviously, if there's a nuke close enough to you,
yeah, God flying forbid. Glass is the last of your worries.
Yeah, it's the least of your problems. That's true. Well, the government is here to help. And at ready.gov, I think this is under the FEMA umbrella, but it's ready.gov, G-O-V. They have a section on nuclear explosions. And I went to the government website, and because I saw this floating around Twitter this morning, and people were kind of making fun. And I thought, oh, that can't be true. So I went to that government website, and it's true. So in the section under nuclear explosion, it talks about what could occur, radiation, how to stay safe. And they have this in the section on stay inside. Okay? Pay close attention, please. Okay. Stay inside for 24 hours. This is after a nuke goes off, okay? Stay inside for 24 hours unless local authorities provide other instructions. Continue to practice social distancing by wearing a mask and keeping a safe distance of at least, keeping a distance rather, of at least 6 feet between yourself and people who are not part of your household. So
boy, that sounds that sounds familiar.
They can't drop it. If there's a nuke going off near you, social distancing is the least of your concerns at that point. Now, wearing a mask might be good in terms of not breathing in particulate matter, because fallout being what it is, can be ingested into your body through breathing. So I'm not saying, but I don't know, because I haven't looked it up. I don't know whether, you know, irradiated material like ash and other radioactive materials are small enough to get through the holes, you know, the perforations in the mask. I don't know.
Well, wow. So the science has changed, because I don't see anything about getting under my desk and not looking at the window.
Well, that's assuming that you're not a school child. So maybe in school, they're just assuming that that would still be in place. But people are talking about this morning, and it is noteworthy that in the instructions for how to survive a nuclear blast, they're still worried about social distancing. So I have a feeling that COVID is the least of your problems if you're in what's the term, sheltering in place, because a nuke has just gone off near you and you have to stay indoors because of radiation. I think that COVID is probably not among your high priority issues, but that's in there.
This is real.
It is real.
The government says stay 6 feet apart and wear a mask in the event of a nuclear holocaust. Okay.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
I'm laughing instead of crying here.
Well, we'll just leave that there. People can make of it what they will. 888-914-914. Let's go to Eugene in Chicago. Good morning, Eugene.
Oh, good morning, sir.
Yes, hi. Welcome.
Hey, you guys remember a couple of years ago when, you know, I think it was 60 Minutes, I think it was a WBBM broadcast, there was a young mother, young Filipino mother behind like rice paper, low lit. It was an interview. It was during the reign of President Duterte, I believe.
Okay.
And in the Philippines? Asked her, like, I'm sorry?
In the Philippines, you mean?
Yes, sir, in the Philippines.
Okay.
And she was alluding to working for the government when it came to her children. And she says, what sort of future do my children have in the future when it comes to all this drug activity where it's prostitution or the drug world? So she took the job with the government as being a hitman for the government.
Okay.
I was just wondering if President Putin was looking at the Western world in those similar perspective. The war on drugs, that's kind of a slow death too. It's sinister, maniacal. You know, we see a lot of our cities imploding from such drug use. So that's what I have for you. That question is looking for devil's advocate with regards to Putin's perspective on things.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I'm not sure I'm grasping the connection between the two. So you mentioned war on drugs. You mentioned assassins, government-paid assassins, and the future of children. And I'm not making the connection. It may just be I need more coffee, Eugene. So tie these three together for me because I'm not seeing the connection.
Well, maybe he perceives the Western world as being, maybe we've corrupted ourselves, maybe we've spoiled ourselves on the vine. I mean, I think we're a little, maybe becoming twisted and demented in his viewpoint. Does that help at all?
So do you mean, okay, maybe. So do you mean like in Russia, gay, pride, LGBTQ type parades are illegal. The Russian government has strict laws that prohibit some things that are celebrated here, sexual perversion and other things that are allowed and celebrated here in the United States, and they are forbidden by law in Russia. Do you have in mind that kind of thing?
I guess we could delve into that a little bit. I think I believe that maybe something like that should maybe go back into the closet, because I think it does confuse children and the youth. They're already
okay.
They're growing up.
Okay, so I'm still lost. I'll tell you that much. But let me try to play along here. So, to play a devil's advocate, wouldn't it be the case then that Putin? Why would he be invading Ukraine? Why wouldn't he be invading us or France or Holland or someplace where it's really rampant by comparison with a much more conservative country like Ukraine? That's the part I'm not making sense out of it. Why would he go after Ukraine if his real target is San Francisco?
Perhaps corruption is sinister? I'm kind of fishing here with it. I appreciate the debate, and I'm trying to learn.
Sure. Yeah. I guess I'm not even really debating because I'm honestly trying to make sense out of the dilemma that you're proposing here, and I'm just not catching it.
All right.
How about this, Eugene? Because I have an open door policy. Maybe if you just want to formulate it a little bit more. And then when you feel like you've got something more kind of specific or something I can sink my teeth into, I welcome you to call me back and we can pick it up from there.
Very good, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Joshua in Albuquerque, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Patrick. I just wanted to get some reassurance. If it's okay to listen to, you know, podcasts that criticize the Pope.
Well, let me put it this way. You are what you eat, as the old saying goes. And it's not that one should never seek to be aware of other points of view. I think that's important. I try to do that myself. And there are things that I listen to or watch or read that I don't agree with, or I might strongly disagree with it. But I will pay attention so that I can understand what that person is saying and understand, if necessary, how to defeat it in the realm of ideas. So I don't mean to suggest that there's never a time when you shouldn't take those things into account, but you are what you eat. So if you have a steady diet of something that is corrosive or will actually, as happens in some cases, I've known some people who become bitter and angry and cynical and suspicious and even paranoid. And their whole world begins to revolve around those concerns. Not that there may not necessarily be some legitimate reason to be concerned, but they can become almost poisoned by it, where that's all they care about or think about or worry about. And I would argue that that's bad for somebody. It's certainly not how Jesus describes the spiritual life. You know, we should be joyful. We should be optimistic, not in a naive sense, but knowing that Jesus has the victory. And if we are faithful and close to him, that come what may, then we will share in that victory. So I would just propose that to you. Think about that. I'm sure there are some foods that you avoid eating because you know they're bad for your body, or certain chemicals that might be in the fizzy drinks or in the candy or in whatever that you avoid eating because you don't want those chemicals in your body. I try to take that approach. And that would be my best suggestion. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Let's go to, is it Thad or Tad in Austin, Texas?
It's Thad. Good morning. Good morning.
Hello, Patrick. Thad. Welcome.
I got two questions about war that I wanted to bring up, Patrick. The first one is, just for simplicity's sake, we know that since, I'll just go with World War I for simplicity's sake, not far, but since then, all of our wars, the majority of deaths are really civilian. And this question I have is actually a question that was posed by, at the time, Joseph Ratzinger, Cardinal Ratzinger, before he became Pope in 2003. He said, given the new weapons that make possible destructions that would go beyond combat groups, today we should ask ourselves if it is still licit to admit the very existence of just war. So that's my first question, because it seems like if we're killing so many civilians, how, if all sides are doing that, how can we have just war?
Well, tell me, okay, I think I follow you, but who is we and what are the killings that we are doing? I'm not sure what you mean by that.
So we could say we as humanity, we could say we as the United States of America, regardless, the majority of deaths in modern warfare are civilians.
Okay. I won't argue that point, except to say that we now have laser-guided precision weapons that can pinpoint a specific person in a car and leave other people in the car untouched, or at least take out a car with a person in it. But without quibbling, if your premise is, if we militarily, I guess is what you're referring to, are defending ourselves.
Right.
Okay. Well, obviously, and I think you and I would agree on this, that any effort or every effort should be made always to avoid killing innocent people. The church is very clear about that. Sometimes in warfare, war being what it is, it's unavoidable, which makes it all the more heinous, you know, all the more terrible. But there are situations where in order to defend yourself, even though you don't intend the death of innocent people, sometimes it's an unintended side effect. And yet you're not doing anything immoral if you are defending yourself from lethal aggression, knowing that your defense, as long as it's proportionate, might lead to the death of innocent people. That's unintended. There are scenarios where that obtains, I believe.
I would agree with that. I just think that given what we know happens in war, this is, it's, you know, for example, in the Gulf War in Iraq, there was, you know, our Air Force and our Navy, that they intentionally bombed like sewage treatment plants, water plants, electrical power grids, like all illegal, and all of that causes, you know, civilian suffering and civilian deaths on top of, you know, direct deaths. And I think we need to get stronger as a church to speak with our military and our policymakers and end those kinds of practices.
Okay. I'm not sure what to say about that. I don't think that that is an absolutely true statement. There are times when you can avoid death by causing pressure that doesn't cause death directly. But if it weakens the enemy and he gives up, then you wind up saving people. But it's an interesting topic, Thad. Let's talk about it again sometime. I'll be right back.